Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Love to See It, the podcast where we watch TV shows and movies and sometimes things like music videos and commercials. And I tell you all about them. I am your host, Danielle, Mission Impossible Tactical Shirt Riendo, and I am joined by two incredible co-hosts, two buddies, two friends in heistery. I'm joined by Fernanda Bulldog the Bruiser Braches. How are you today, Fernanda?
I'm doing good, thank you. My wife is pregnant again.
Again? Oh, man.
Again, yeah.
It happens a lot. It happens often. and also, the incredible LB, Gaudy Monstrosity Hunk Tears. How are you today, LB?
You know, pretty good. Gaudy, monstrous, the usual.
Incredible. Well, in case you haven't guessed it, you know, we're doing a special one today. We are watching Ocean's 11, the 2001 Steven Soderbergh, Ocean's 11.
It's never been done before.
You want to knock over a casino?
Three casinos?
You gotta be nuts.
Exactly. This place houses a security system that rivals most nuclear missile silos.
Smash and grab job, huh?
Slightly more complicated than that.
Oh, yeah.
You'd need at least a dozen guys doing a combination of cons.
10 ought to do it, don't you think? All right, we'll get one more.
We're just supposed to walk out of there with $150 million in cash without getting stopped?
Yeah.
Why do this?
Because the house always wins. Unless, when that perfect hand comes along, you bet big, and then you take the house.
Been practicing this speech,
haven't you? A little bit. Did I rush it? Felt like I rushed it.
No, it was good. I liked it.
Of course, Ocean's 11 is a 2001 American heist comedy film directed by Steven Soderbergh and written by Ted Griffin. It is the first installment in the Ocean's franchise and a remake of the 1960 Rat Pack film of the same name. Ocean's 11 features an ensemble cast, including George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Don Cheadle, Andy Garcia, Bernie Mac, and Julia Roberts, and many, many, many others, many appearances, many celebrities. It's just a big old celebrity fest. So here we're going to go into our first segment of the podcast, which we lovingly call the first scene, which is when we kind of talk about the movie and our history with the movie and whether we've seen it before or whether we have, you know, a long, involved, in-depth history with something or it's, you know, the first time. I'm going to start with you, Fernanda. Have you seen Ocean's 11 before? And what's your history here?
I have. I think my history is probably the same as a lot of people's. Like, I watched it in my early teens, like, and I was old enough to kind of be horny about it, but because like the cast is meant for that, I guess. But not enough to fully comprehend why. So my memory of it, I kind of thought I had rewatched it over the years, but then watching it last night, I really hadn't, and that was pretty much just a vague. Like, I had the vague recollection of just heisty things with conventionally attractive actors. And then recently for Best Camp of My Life, my MMA podcast, also here on FanBite.
Yeah. If
you're interested, dear listeners, and want to check it out. But I made a joke about sleeping with half their cast. So this really is a full circle moment for me. I have not slept with half the cast of Ocean's 11, by the way. Wouldn't mind it, but just hasn't happened for me yet. Just wasn't in the cards. And I'll stop now because I'm already doing the thing where I just get really horny on our podcast and I apologize. But no, that's my history with Ocean's 11, just vague horniness.
I think this is a safe space for this. Fernanda, don't feel bad. I think it's beautiful. I think it's wonderful. You watch this at a very formative time for horniness. So I get it. I get it. You know, I get it.
That's my defense. And it's Brad Pitt. I mean, I think all of us at some point. There's at least one Brad Pitt role that literally every person on the planet is horny for Brad Pitt. That's my opinion. That's my theory.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to think about that, but I think you're right for most people, for sure. For sure. LB, how about you? What is your history with this heisty, funny, super high-powered Hollywood film?
I think it's probably pretty similar to just like about everybody who lives in the United States of America and has a television.
Yeah.
So I've seen this movie a billion times because it, I think in like 2004 through maybe the, through like 2010, you could, like, you would make this joke about all kinds of movies, but I think for Ocean's 11, it's actually true. You could turn on the TV and it would be on it. It would be on.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I've seen it all the way through a few times, but like bits and pieces, I have seen it just like I can quote this movie without realizing it. It's just like, it's, yeah. It's like a Trading Places kind of level of like how many times I've seen it just because it's always on TV.
Yeah.
I feel like it's on TV less now, and like some, like Ocean's 13, I think took its place and is frequently on TV, but it's the Ocean's franchise moment as like a constantly on TV movie. That time has passed.
Yeah.
But when I think about it, I often think about like being in high school and like I'm at home, I'm on my, just this like, the lumpiest sofa. Then it was the kind where you could take the like the cover off and put it in the washing machine and the dryer, and just ugly, shapeless red sofa that we had in my in the TV room when I was a kid. And I'd be sitting with my mom. I'd have my laptop on my lap. It would be so hot, and I'd be on LiveJournal.
Oh,
oh my god! That's
and
good
a forum or something, and this would be on. And this is it's like a 2-hour movie, but with commercial breaks, this movie's like 5 hours long.
Yeah, this is all
so, yeah,
day.
It would just be like, it would be like an entire afternoon. Maybe it was too hot for me to go outside. Maybe I was grounded. But yeah, it'd be me and my mom watching this, and my dad would periodically come through because at that point he was working from home. So he would kind of waddle through, get like some popcorn for work, and then go back to his little office.
That's such a like genuinely charming thought though, of like just that, you know, like a weekend afternoon or something, like, or, mm-hmm. or I guess weekday, but like later afternoon kind of thing after school. I don't know. I think that's a really charming image. I think that's nice.
It is. It is. Yeah. I'm sad I tainted our pure little thing with my observations.
No.
That's lovely.
If I was on LiveJournal, what I'd be doing was like trying to get access to the secret adults only Harry Potter fanfic communities that were very exclusive.
Thank you. I feel better now.
And also, like, everyone was faking their own deaths and scamming each other out of thousands of dollars. Like, yeah.
Truly a great time. It was on TV a lot in Brazil, too. I'll say that. Yeah. Like,
okay.
That's the thing. I didn't remember. Yeah, it was a lot. Usually not during the day, though. That's my recollection, that it was a night movie. But I had never... So I had seen, like, over the years, all the bits and pieces. I just really didn't remember watching it all the way through in a few years. Right. But it was. I think the sequels, really not as much, but Ocean's 11 was also part of our just sort of TV culture.
Yeah.
So, dubbed, I'm assuming, in Portuguese.
Right?
No, or no?
Honestly, that's the thing I'm trying to remember, because I think Globo at night, yeah, you could, we have like, I don't know, like SAP key where you can change the language.
Oh, okay.
But I'm trying to remember. That's actually a good question. I remember the movies during the day were all dubbed. The ones that I don't remember at night, if they had subtitles or they were dubbed. But in Globo, which is like our major channel, I think they were dubbed.
Okay.
Which is an interesting thing.
I've seen it dubbed. I've seen parts of it dubbed in Spanish on TV here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it would get played also.
It really translates to all cultures.
It does.
I mean, it's just like, what? Like, I think stealing stuff is a universal language. And that's why, like,
yes.
I was thinking about this when I was putting together, like, the program for Heist Month. And this is our final installment. And, like, the history of heist movies and, like, the history, I guess, of thieves in stories. And, like, this enduring fascination with them. Like, the first animated movie is, I think, like,
The Bicycle Thief?
No, the first animated.
Sorry. I was thinking.
Movie. Because I think, like, is it, like, an Alibaba Prince of Thieves thing? Or is it an Aladdin? I don't know. It's, like, it's like a really, really, really old thief story that I can't remember. And I'm sorry to
the film class
that I almost failed. And, yeah. You know. But, like, treasure hunting and stealing, like, these pirates. Are all story, like, these are kind of things and stories mm-hmm. that do exist, like, all over the world and have for, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So I think there is something that's really universally exciting and satisfying about stealing shit.
Yeah, this is also,
and I'm backed up,
such a slick Hollywood movie in every way. That
yeah.
I think it speaks to, like, this is cool things in America that speaks to, like, everyone, right? Like, universally, like, what's cool in America? What's Hollywood in America? What's, you know, Vegas, slick suits, white guys who are bantering with each other. Like, that is this movie.
I think this is the second best Vegas movie of all time.
The second best what?
Las Vegas movie.
Ah, yes. Of course, second only to Showgirls.
Of course, yeah.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I even asked. That was just okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Almost didn't choose this one for the, like, I almost went with something else because I'm like, oh, Ocean's 11. Like, that's so obvious. Like, everyone's seen that. But then I remembered, like, this was originally a movie rewatch podcast where we watched, like, Jurassic Park and all these things we'd seen before. And we watched movies, like, mm-hmm. everybody's seen. And I like that. And also, this movie is, like, well, it is one of the best heist movies. It is really satisfying and slick and fun. And the heist itself comes together in a way that's just, like, when I think about, like, a really satisfying heist movie, I often think of something like Ocean's 11 or Inside Man, where, like, it all kind of comes together at the end and it just mm-hmm. feels really juicy and satisfying. Yeah. Is something on fire across the street?
Oh no, they watched too much Ocean's 11. They got too hot. it was too hot.
It literally blew their minds.
I really hope everyone's okay across the street.
Maybe it's just like exhaust or something. I'm sorry about that. Do you ever notice smoke and get alarmed?
It's okay. I would keep my eye on that.
I would say that being alarmed by smoke is like just good survival instincts.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Keep an eye on it. I would say. I will briefly say my history with the movie. I was 17 when this came out. I think I saw it in theaters. I can't honestly remember. I saw it like around when it came out. And I remember seeing like a DVD special features for it and about like costume design and production design and things like that way back when that was very new. Like when it was very new to have DVDs that had extra, you know, extras on them. I remember that when I was like in senior year of high school and being like, yeah, that's interesting. I liked this movie because there's obvious things to like about this movie, but it was never my favorite. And I'm still kind of there. I'm still mm-hmm. kind of there where it's like, this is a very fun movie. This movie loves itself so much. This movie loves itself more than anything has ever loved itself in the history of the universe. This movie is like, I'm the slickest. I'm so funny. I'm so cool. Look at my suits. It is very, 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 very much in love with itself, which is like, it probably should be. Heist movies probably should be in love with themselves, but that will always also raise my instinct as a very jealous little queer lady. That's just like, well, why can't I get the hot girls? Why are these guys getting all the hot girls? So there's always going to be a challenge. There's always going to be a challenge for me. Whenever a movie is about hot white guys being hot white guys, it'll always be a little bit. There's always going to be a little bit of a challenge for me. So I go into this and I say this with my whole heart. being open and being open to learn and share and care and feel the love for Ocean's 11. So we should get into the plot a little bit. We start out with, you know, hottie, the hottest George Clooney has ever looked, as Daniel Ocean getting through his like prison parole interview and, you know, immediately going to a casino in Atlantic City and kind of meeting up with Frank, who's Bernie Mac, who is wonderful in this and does not get enough screen time by any means. I think the scenes he's in are among the best scenes of this movie. Mm-hmm. So I really wish there was more of him in it. But we kind of started all out with, okay, he's gonna start making a job. He's going to start thinking about the next big job because, of course, he's been to prison for being a thief, even though he didn't get completely caught. It's a little unclear. It's like, oh, he was only in there for 4 years because, like, he didn't get every charge. He was only on, like, some kind of minor charge. Now he's out, and he's going to start plotting his next moves, and we're going to start meeting all the crew. So, I'm kind of blazing through the beginning because I think the best part of this movie is, like, once the crew is together and starting to banter with each other. But if there are other thoughts about early movie stuff, please, please go for it. No?
I think the introductions to the characters are really good.
Yeah.
And like, especially like thinking back to The Hot Rock, which does like, to me, a perfect job of introducing its mm-hmm. characters. Like the introduction of the driving guys, that scene.
Yes.
They don't get very much like, you know, build up as people, which is fine because they're just like great as these bickering dipshits.
Yeah.
But they're my favorite bickering part. Dipshits. They're great. It sets them up as like hot bickering dipshits. And one of them does remote controlled stuff and that pays off later in a very fun, satisfying way. The introduction to Brad Pitt's introduction is great and ages really well. We get him teaching these like WB. The CW used to be a channel called the WB that had stuff like Dawson's Creek and
Charmed,
the Witch Show. What was the Witch Show called?
Charmed,
Charmed, and Seventh Heaven.
I was like Piper.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I got carried away. I loved it so much because it was just a little throwback to my early teens.
Yeah, like these were the stars who were being sold, who were literally being sold to us as like, this is the future of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Like these are the hot new things. And this aged really well. For me, like I think me and Fernanda are in like very premium positions to find that section funny because mm-hmm. we were like that age where we like absolutely. Danielle, I think, was maybe a little too like
so old.
Well, you were like when they were trying to market like the hot teen stars, you were an actual teen and you were like, I'm a person with actual interests.
Yeah, that's kind of what
me and Fernanda are like 10 and 11. Exactly. And we're like, this is what being a teen. Okay, I'm getting ready to be a teen. And to be a teen, I have to read like 17 magazine. And
absolutely. Like I have to have teens to model myself after for this endeavor.
Like these 28-year-old teens on television who have a lot of problems.
Like stuff like Seventh Heaven and like about witches and extremely religious family. There is zero relatability in any of these people.
I had Buffy. Like when I was a younger teen, I did have like at least the very, very beginning of Buffy was when I was a younger teen. So like I had something.
So you had like the really good WB moment.
Yeah. I mean, I actually like 1997 when I was 13, that's when Buffy was like starting up. I think Buffy started in like the 96-97 season, which was like me in seventh grade. So that one actually worked out for me.
Okay, so that's perfect.
I've at least got that. Otherwise, I missed out on so many things that brought so many people wonder and delight because I was like, I'm thinking about college.
Like, so it's fine. Looking at these actors now, though, it feels very like they're like no offense to them. Like I hope they're all doing great, but they're kind of like flash
the
pan-ness
of a time. Like Holly Marie Combs has never been heard of again. I think she said something cool on Twitter the other day. And again, no offense, good for you. If you made enough money on that one show, Holly Marie Combs, you do you. Because if I ever have enough money to retire, I absolutely will.
No one would ever hear from me again.
But that's totally
a great introduction to him as a character. Honestly, like Bernie Mac's introduction is good. He is a character who like gets better. Mm-hmm. Or Frank is a character who gets better like every time he's on screen.
Yeah.
And he is just like that. That was, yeah, he is like, what a fucking treasure.
I know.
And yeah, that's one thing of watching this now is I'm just like so sad.
It's sad. It is really sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, RIP, like what a fucking legend.
Like a fucking king.
Yeah.
Like the Elliot Gould introduction is amazing. Carl Reiner in this movie is so lovely and so wonderful. And like, I'm not sad about Carl Reiner the way I'm sad about Bernie Mac, because sure. Carl Reiner died last year at 98 years old.
That's a full life.
That's a full life.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Jinx. You did it, King. it's these really good little like blips of these views into these people are, which I like a lot about early movie. But yeah, once everybody gets together and once Elliot Gould shows up and they're all at his house, that I think is where this movie really, really gets going.
Yeah.
My favorite little bit is probably when the light goes out in the middle of the boxing match and then they restart. It's just such a silly little bit. And I was obsessed with it. I thought it was amazing, but I'm getting ahead of myself. But yeah, that's kind of like, it just stuck with me.
Yeah, I love that part too. It's very, very good. And it's very like, this is a movie of little moments, I think, that mm-hmm. are very fun. Mm-hmm. And the big heist, of course, kind of coming together well. Like, it's like little moments, little moments, little moments. And then this, like, really delicious layer cake of a plot being carried out.
Mm-hmm.
And being carried out in a really slick and entertaining kind of manner, for sure. Which, again, this movie is so good about that it got me through my assholeness. My being an asshole.
I don't think it's assholeness for you to not be into, like, that this is a kind of a smug movie. And also, like...
It is.
They do kind of shove this love story at us that sucks.
Oh, so bad.
I hate it.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
I hate it. I wish,
we can get into
honest
it.
To God.
We want to get into it now, or do we want to like go through the plot thing?
Let's get into it now, because this is really the motivation for Daniel Ocean. He wants the money. He wants to go after this casino, this group of three casinos. This is the job. But what he really wants is his hot ex-wife back, who is just a possession. She's just a statue. That's mm-hmm. all she is. She is a statue of a woman who played by a perfect actress, by, of course, the one, the only Julia Roberts. But, like, she does
terrible
literally
costumes.
Nothing in this movie. Has no
Oh, my God. She's so poorly dressed in this movie. I can't.
I guess she's supposed to be, like, she's smart. That's why she dresses like this.
She has brain. And I had just literally, like, the day before seen that the movies that made us on Netflix, and I saw the Pretty Woman one, and her wardrobe in Pretty Woman is so amazing. And I spent the entire movie being angry. When she wears that frumpy little red pantsuit, I don't know, like, thing, I was just irate. Thank you, LB, for bringing it up, because this has been bugging me. I slept poorly tonight thinking about whoever did this to Julia Roberts in this movie.
Okay, I have a thing to present. I have a, like, an alternate, like, okay, imagine this movie is exactly the same, right? Except at the end, Tess goes out to him and is like, thank you, that guy sucked. Good job stealing from him, I'll see you around.
Right?
Yep, that's
like,
totally
great. Different.
And she
thing.
Just like goes off and is her own person. Like, that would be
cool.
So much better to me, I think. And he would like, his motivation would be like to get like this woman who I still love out of this relationship with a guy who's fucking sucks.
Yep.
So I don't have to worry about her. Like, I don't, because like that would be terrible if you like somebody, like you lose your ex, like that's on you. But now they're with somebody who's way worse than you. Like, you don't necessarily want them back, but you do want them to not be with somebody who is like
toxic,
a vindictive
and evil
monster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And also, big shouts to Andy Garcia in this movie also for,
oh,
like...
He's so slimy.
He's so unappealing, so cold. Everybody else is having the time of their fucking lives. Don Cheadle is doing history's, like, worst British accent. Yep. The most charming person ever lived. Like, everybody is having so much fun, and Andy Garcia is having zero fun. Or, like,
yep.
It's just, he's just, like, playing this flat monster. Who's
like
not likable at all.
Yeah, he's a
it's
black
amazing.
Hole of fun. The fun goes to die at his, like, at his shoes. Like, it's just, and like...
And he's worth, like, one quarter of a billion or something. They mention it. And, like, so you're extremely rich and successful and you can do whatever, but, like, you choose to live this, like, boring, just stressful, not at all appealing or sexy life. He really is cruel. Good at that.
And he's cruel. And it's great. So, like, imagine exactly the same movie, except they take out the love story and make it into, like, a, like, we're not together anymore, and that's cool, and I'm cool with that, and I respect your space, but I need to help you get out of this bad situation. Like, yeah. Danny would be such a more heroic, like, I think he'd be so much cooler, and she would be, like, more of a person. I don't know. I just, like, that's what I want.
She would at least be a person. She would at least do something and have anything, any emotion, anything other than I'm mad at my ex, now I date an evil man. Like, that's it. That's it. That's all it is.
And they, like, they also do not have chemistry. Like, if they had, like, really, like, ooh, like, if there had been, like, a lot of tension of, like, oh, I'm still so into you, like, maybe it would have slightly worked even in, like, a sexist, shitty way. But it didn't even work in the sexist, shitty way, because they're they're, like, right. I'm not excited about them making out.
They have that one scene with the, like, the supposed to be the sexy banter, right, when he encounters her for the first time since getting out of prison, and they're at the restaurant, and I think the writing of the scene is good, like, it is, and I think they were aiming for exactly what you're saying, LB, like, this, okay, this is toxic and unhealthy, and no, let's not aspire to that, but, like, I can kind of get it?
But toxic and unhealthy can be super sexy. Like, that's why NBC's Hannibal was so successful. Yes.
But, like, it didn't work, I think, with them. Like you said, it's just the chemistry wasn't there.
It's off, yeah. So they should just go back and recut it. That's the case.
Just, if you're listening, people... If responsible for Steven. This. Fix Julia Roberts' outfits and the movie, please.
Although I do wonder if, like, because at the end she is in, like, a normal outfit when she's, like, in the final scene. She's in, like, a sweater and her hair down. Right. So maybe the bad outfits are, like, an indication of how unnatural this stupid life is.
Yeah. I actually like that. I like that as a read, because my suggestion would have been to go back and re-edit it, and it's just a, like, cardboard cutout of Julia Roberts in every single scene, because that would have been a better movie, because that would have had more emotion and more of anything in that plot. So,
like, and no one addresses it's a cardboard cutout, like, exactly. They just go about it normally.
Part of my day, the cardboard cutout kind of just, like, falls down the stairs.
Like, honestly, it just, like, falls down, it, like, wafts down, and Brad Pitt's like, she looked good. You know, like, the whole fucking thing.
Julia Roberts is, she's very beautiful and, like, a very good actress. But I've seen Julia Roberts, and I would never be like, oh, getting to watch Julia Roberts walk down the stairs is the best part of my day. It's like, that's not the, I don't know.
And can we just talk about Matt Damon?
There's jokes at play
in this
here.
Movie.
Sorry?
Oh, sorry. Go Matt ahead. Damon? I missed that. No, LB, go ahead. Say what you were going to say.
I was asking you to repeat yourself.
Gotcha. I was like, can we just talk about Matt Damon in this movie?
Yeah.
What is he doing? What is he doing in this movie? I'm sorry.
He was supposed to be Mark Wahlberg originally.
I mean, could see Mark Wahlberg in this role
that
so much
made
more
a lot
easily.
Sense.
He was, I think, I don't know. I think Matt Damon's great in this.
He's so sniveling. He's such a,
that's
like,
the point. He's like a little, he's a little baby, like, and he's annoying, and he almost ruins everything because he's impatient and a little boy.
Yeah, but I still don't understand that
boy at this time. Like, he was a grown ass man.
He's
a
kid, but he's
star.
No, but he's referred to as the kid. I think I understand. Like, he's supposed to be sort of this immature and up until a certain point unreliable, youthful character that they end up trusting. I think, but I still don't understand. In the van scene, when the brothers start bickering, and I will just pretend that Casey Affleck is not one of the brothers, so I can appreciate their
that's
dynamic.
That's true. Yeah.
And then he leaves the van and goes in the building and almost ruins everything. And I still don't understand the motivation for the act of going in the building still. Like, there are some things with this movie that maybe it's a me thing. Maybe I just didn't understand it, but I was like, I don't, like, it's just a very, like, the character is there just to be inconvenient.
I never understood that before. And now I understand.
What? The part specifically,
just,
or his existence?
That part specifically, because I would have done, because I, when I was younger, I'd be like, this idiot, just stay in the van, suck it up. Like, you're doing a big steal. Like, be a good boy. But now, now that I, like, I wouldn't be able to handle that. I would also have left.
But he could have, like, just stood outside the van.
Outside the van.
Listen.
That's my whole thing. Like, that's what I don't understand. He went in the building and up the stairs.
And then he grabbed the window.
Like, because when the vibes are off, vibes are off enough, like, I can't be held accountable for anything I do.
Okay, you just run away from the vibes. It's like, you would run straight into the science people.
I would, like, if the vibes are off enough, my behavior becomes completely unpredictable.
Okay, okay.
That's why, I need the vibes to be right. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's really important for the vibes to be right. And, okay, like, I honestly, like, as fun as these brothers are to watch in this movie, I would not invite them on my heist team. Because the vibes are off. They're too off. Like, and then you see that, like, when they're first at Elliot Gould's house, when one of them is, like, trying to get Saul to come to Provo. It's like, he's not going to go to Utah. You need to read the room, guys. And they can't read the room. And that's why I would not invite them on my heist team.
That's a good, that's like absolutely understandable though.
But
like,
I'm also sensitive to vibes.
Yeah. No, but that's, and I think that's a good feature. But like the thing is, yeah, I totally understand because they're interesting to watch, but they're not, they're probably a nightmare to interact with. And I kind of had that sort of same relationship with my sister and nobody liked us, so I can understand.
Although me and Robbie watching this did start doing the exact, like, he started doing I'm not touching you, and then we, like, divide the couch just to, like, my side, which is, like, fun to do, and it's funny. But also, I'm an only child.
But the vibes are off. I agree with you. And now you presented me with an explanation for Matt Damon's
behavior.
I had
wondered that for years, and, like, this was the part that always made me very angry. Mm-hmm. And I'd always, because, like, when I'd watch it on TV, I'd somehow always get it, like, around them having to steal the pinch, or like around Don Cheadle covered in mud doing Cockney rhyming slang, and like, plus that bad accent, it's so good. I would much rather have it be a bad accent than a good accent.
That's true. Yeah. I think it makes it entire. But why give him an accent? Like, did he absolutely need to be British for the part to work? Like, those.
It makes it feel more international, and it's and it's funny that it's a bad accent. I don't know. It feels more Hollywood to me somehow.
Yeah. And there's, like, the
Don
whole
Cheadle
thing
is doing a bad accent.
You're right. And there's the whole thing about them, like, not understanding anything he says, which is like the whole bit. And it wouldn't make sense if it was just American saying American things.
But also, Paul points out that I guess it's a running joke in the sequels.
Yeah, apparently.
Which is fun.
Like, they keep talking about, like, oh, the importance of a bad accent, of a good fake accent, and it's really a bad accent. Like, there's apparently, I'm sorry. I'm just still stuck on it being Matt Damon. His face isn't right for this sniveling little asshole thing. he has, like, Mr. All-American, I play football face, not a sniveling little, like, I suck. I'm the little brother who sucks. Like,
it's a versatile face. I don't know. I think Mark Wahlberg would have been better because he kind of has.
What?
No, he's got the little
talk about the
vibe
being off.
It does. Yeah, I think
his evil energy, though, would have ruined the movie.
Yeah, but he's an evil character.
He's not an evil character. He's just a little shit.
You think he has evil energy, Mark Wahlberg?
Yes. Mark Wahlberg has denounced Boogie Nights.
I mean, that is problematic. I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
lie.
But that's
he's denounced
not
his best movie as
but that's
being
a
like sinful.
Conscious thing. That's not an energy thing.
He also has evil energy. He has like okay. The thing is, it's like, do we want? I think if we're talking Boston energies, right? Uh-huh. Matt Damon is like about as good as like white Boston guy energy can get.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good assessment.
And like, the opposite end of that, I feel, and I'm sorry to Boston. But honestly, okay. Boston, you know what you did.
Yeah.
You know what you are, Boston.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. Yeah, they know. They know. I lived there for a long time. I understand.
And I mean, like, you're from a haunted-ass New England city, and it's still less cursed than Boston.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. Yeah, that's correct.
I love how much I learn about American culture on this show.
Also, I mean, maybe it's just that the only Matt Damon I had seen when this came out was Good Will Hunting, which I didn't understand because I was a child. So I was just like, this is a movie about a fucking nerd.
Oh!
So that's a nerd. Oh. It was like math or something. So he shows up in this. I'm like, okay, it's that nerd.
Just an angsty nerd.
Oh, wow. He won an Academy Award for math.
For mistreating Robbie Williams. Like, why? Who does that?
Oh, God. Well, in my child mind, I'm like, he got Robin Williams to be in a math movie for the Academy Awards.
Wow. No, I mean, as you're explaining it, it is making sense to me. I will say that.
Yeah. That's my child mind.
Right, but, like, that's the framing, that's the lens that we're looking at it from, so it's, like, making sense now. I'll go with it. I'm going with it. We're here now. We do also get introduced to Yen, who is
Yen
wild
is amazing.
Acrobat, and also my other favorite person in this movie, and, all right, is this a little racist, the framing around him? Does it feel a little racist to anybody else? Because it felt a little racist.
To me. I don't know. That's the thing. Obviously, as a white Brazilian person, my perspective is limited. So take everything I say about anything ever with a grain of salt. But I do... It to me just came across as kind of like they made maybe stereotypical. And sometimes like a little... Like the language is a little less, I guess, a little more generalizing than what we would use today. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I got racist myself personally.
Okay.
Here's what I think.
Okay.
You know how they get like Daniel in the beginning, Danny Ocean is in prison, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't get him for like being a grand heist master. They got him for like some weird minor technicality, but they know he's a grand heist master. And mm-hmm. most of the time he goes through life being a grand heist master, but they can never quite catch him at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not racist because there's nothing you can actually like say, like point to and be like, this is racist. But like, you know, someone in there, multiple someone's in there are racist. You just can't find it. That's how I read it.
Okay.
And there's also like a circus thing. And the thing is, and it's like, it's confusing because the circus sucks. And being in the circus sucks.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
There's also that. So it's this weird combination of things. But I don't think you're wrong. I don't think it's not racist. Yeah. But I think it's just like maybe there was a racist thing and it got cut. Like an overtly racist thing that got cut.
There's just kind of something there with the energy.
It smells off.
I don't know.
The energy, yeah. It smells off.
Yeah.
But I can't take it to court.
Right, you know? Right. Nobody
says... You can't
take
it to cancellation court.
Nobody says some, like, a shitty slur or anything like
all
that.
All the evidence is circumstantial.
Right, yeah, it's just...
There's not even any evidence. It's just, like, it smells wrong.
Something... They cut something out. They must have cut something out. I don't know
like,
what.
Maybe.
But...
Like, even just in the original, like, draft.
Yeah!
The original draft of the screenplay, like, I can just, like, I can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like a very specific podcast endeavor that somebody could go, like, I don't know if you ever heard Dead Eyes, about the guy who, like, Tom Hanks told him he had dead eyes, and, like, he made a whole podcast about it.
Oh, my God.
No.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a comedian, and he auditioned for Band of Brothers, and he was gonna get the role. But he didn't because Tom Hanks thought he had dead eyes. And he literally turned it into such a good podcast, which I say this all to say that maybe this could be a highly specific podcast for the original draft.
I think that we would be the least qualified people to make this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
This
not for us.
Podcast.
Yeah. Yep. Like for but someone somebody, else.
Somebody the out idea. There. Yes.
The idea is up for grabs.
Please take this idea. I would love to listen to this podcast that folks of color create. Like, I would love to hear that for sure. I would love to hear other people make that for sure.
I did always wonder why he would go for this when he's not already a criminal. But now that I'm an adult, I know that being in the circus is the worst life you can live. So that getting a bunch of millions of dollars so you don't have to be in the circus anymore.
Yeah.
It's definitely the way to go. Yeah. Even the circus sucks. The circus sucks, everybody.
It seems like it would be a rough life. Like, it would just be really tough all the time. Just struggle city all the time. Just really, really tough. So, I get it. I get his motivation.
Are we talking, like, actual circus of, like, Cirque du Soleil? Which I personally fucking hate. But I'm guessing it's a better life.
I mean, I think if you're ever Cirque du Soleil, you have, like, a residency at the Bellagio. Yeah. You live in Las Vegas and you have the life of a, like, it's like unsexy French showgirls.
Right. Gotcha.
You know,
like it's more or less, at least a little more stable but not great. It's still really tough. Still tough.
You're not like on the road.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Still rough. Still rough. You still gotta hurt your body every day. Like,
there's probably a lot of sex,
animal abusers.
Yeah, there's no animals, I think, right?
Right, right, right.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
And they probably bang a lot.
Imagine, you're like, have you ever seen, I mean, I've been to Cirque du Soleil and it wasn't sexy at all.
No, it's not.
They have a sexy one, don't they? They have like an erotic Cirque du Soleil.
They do. Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't remember the name, but they do.
The idea of that, the idea of attending erotic Cirque du Soleil is...
Who's that for?
Probably.
Who's that for?
Like 40-year-old, no, 50-year-old swingers, I'm guessing.
Like, they actually went to a key swingers. Party in the 70s. Like, they went to an actual key party when they were 20.
Yeah.
For real. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I have bad news for you about how old people, how old 50-year-olds were in the 70s.
Yeah, you're right. They were born. Okay. Well,
it's for, like, 80-year-old former swingers. Like, horny octogenarians.
Okay, they went to a key party in the 90s that was, like, a 70s-themed key party, but it was in the 90s.
Good job setting this hypothetical scenario.
We did math. We did it, everybody. I'm so proud. I guess we should get slightly back on track.
Sorry,
the boys are together, and they're planning their fucking heist, and they've got recon, they've got construction, they've got drive, they've got like a whole multi-step plan. There is also, I just do want to shout out one scene where they recount like this very like, 60s, 70s, 80s, the most successful heist in history before now. And they were all like really goofy little cutouts of like, oh, somebody made it to the front door. How exciting. And then they died.
Oh, that was such a good scene. Yeah.
That's a fun little scene before the planning. And then of course we get to the planning and we get to the big reveal that of course, Danny Ocean isn't just here for the score. He's here for the test. And he and Brad Pitt have a little fight about it. They're, you know, they have a little, I'm walking. Say it's not about her, or I'm walking. And, you know, they have a whole thing. They have a lot more chemistry, honestly, than Julia Roberts and George Clooney. Like, they sure do. Also, one of the main things I remember about this movie, you know, having not seen it in probably close to 20 years, was just that Brad Pitt is eating in, like, every other scene.
Oh, yeah. That's a great bit.
He just likes to eat. And also, fun fact, Fernanda or Paul put this in the trivia, but apparently in the scene where Paul put it in. Okay, perfect. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, producer Paul. Put in the scene that he was eating shrimp cocktail while doing the iconic scene where Julia Roberts, you know, walks down the stairs. Best part of my day, et cetera, et cetera. He ate like 40 shrimp.
Fantastic.
Oh,
an icon.
Whew.
Is that even, like, I think that's bad for your liver. Because I remember when I was a kid, I really liked shrimp, and I had a lot of risotto, like shrimp risotto, and I got really sick. And my mom said it was my liver. So I'm just going to go ahead and say his liver has been compromised. And on World Hepatitis Day,
right,
no
it's
less.
World Hepatitis Day!
Today, when we're recording, so when it airs, so yesterday for our listeners.
So watch out for your liver. Watch out for your liver today and always, and tomorrow and always, honestly.
And don't eat 40 shrimps.
Don't eat 40 shrimps.
That's incredibly unscientific, though, so maybe research that before believing.
Fernanda's mom says don't eat 40 shrimps.
Yeah, exactly.
I do feel like that's kind of, like, objectively good advice.
Yeah, I think it's too many.
Seems like a lot. Oh,
but, I mean, I would guess heisting burns a lot of calories, so he would need to eat all the time.
It depends on what your job is, I think.
Yeah.
And if you're stressed enough, like... You know, like the stress of being a thief is not good for your digestion, as we've learned from this movie and the Hot Rock. Saul has an ulcer. The Hot Rock introduced the idea of, you know, stomach distress. Lupin was hurt and then just ate a bunch of food.
And then got sick. Yeah.
And then got sick.
Yeah.
There was not, gastrointestinal distress was not addressed in Inside Man.
But it's implied. Clifo obviously has issues with his stomach. Like, he looks like somebody.
Oh, but he does. No, he. I mean, that's just human. Humans just need a pit. His being a thief did not affect his needing, like, a pit to shit into.
Right. You need that no matter what. Yeah.
You do just need that.
You gotta have one of those. You gotta have a ship it. All right.
You gotta have a ship it if you're gonna be in a bank for a week.
Yeah, if you're gonna like be in a little room for a week, you gotta shit somewhere.
Right, I don't care if you're a thief or not. But yeah, it's impossible to say. So maybe that's why he's the maybe he's the best thief of everybody, because his stomach is just like in perfect shape.
Yeah. He's doing great. I in my head canon, he's also like a competitive eater and he's just training the whole time for like his real gig, which is like competitive eating, because he's just always
Clive Owen.
Yeah. Or Rusty in this movie. Yeah, Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
So he's just he's like this is what he does.
He's like, getting it like money. Elastic. You know, he's like getting it ready, you know.
Yeah, but like he's gearing up for the 4th of July when it's gonna hit.
Exactly.
Okay. Those wet hot dogs.
Why did you? Oh no, I can't. Whenever somebody mentions wet hot dogs, I just have the image in my mind for like at least an hour. So
I'm so sorry.
There goes my mid afternoon. Okay,
you're like, I wanted to have lunch. No thanks now. Thanks everybody.
No, all I can see are wet hot dogs.
Yeah,
which are probably the least appealing meal in the world.
Well, they have some more appealing food in this movie. There's like yummy spreads, and there's like, you know, at the initial let's get together and plan a heist party that they have a nice little cocktail party and a nice little spread of food. And of course, Julia Roberts and Terry Benedict, that's I just swapped, like, okay, Tess and Terry Benedict have their lovely dinners. Et cetera, et cetera. There's nice food in this. There's nice food in this movie, too. Yeah. So we can think about that as well. And there's also nice. I was going to go to the next medical thing, but that's not, like, nice and appealing. But Saul, of course, is, like, the big con guy. That's the actor. That's the whole way of getting Yen into the vault, is to have this, like, cool briefcase. And he's playing this, like, I guess German or, like, some sort of
he's supposed to be, like, vaguely European. Eastern European.
Yeah.
Zerger. Arms dealer.
Yeah.
Look at Zerga.
Zerga. There it is. Zerga. And he is ill for parts of the movie, like actually ill. So I got duped again. I actually thought he was sick for real again.
When he fakes his heart attack?
They fake the heart attack so that we can also have Brad Pitt get in there as the fake doctor and do a whole bunch of other kind of stuff going on. And of course, this is all, and as Fernanda had alluded to earlier, arranged around a big fight night, like a big heavyweight boxing match, because that means, of course, that's the biggest, you know, swell of cash flow on the biggest night in the casino. So that's the night to hit it. And that's the night to make it all kind of work and make it all happen. So we have, as we had mentioned before, the Science Institute pinch that is going to cut the power out. We've got Yen in place and we've got Matt Damon and George Clooney doing the Mission Impossible part, which was that's my favorite action part of the movie. It's a sort of Mission Impossible.
Can we touch real fast
on how Matt Damon
gets in there?
Oh, yeah, go for it. Yep, because Bernie Mac, like, this is my favorite scene with Bernie Mac, for sure.
Favorite Bernie Mac scene is there's a part where he's negotiating the price of vans.
Yeah.
at this great Las Vegas car dealership with this, like, kind of older cowboy kind of guy.
Billy Denham.
And she's talking about moisturizing. Crushing the guy's hand in a really charming, intimidating way. And he's just like so warm and so lovable that like, and so, and like so very clearly charming the hell out of this guy while like just squeezing the fucking life out of his hand. It's like that to me is like my favorite, Bernie Mac scene. But like his big moment in the con is they get him a job as a blackjack dealer at the Bellagio. Matt Damon comes in pretending to be part of the Nevada Gaming Commission and reveals that Ramon is actually Frank, a convict. And they do this, like, really good, really uncomfortable... This is all taking place in front of Andy Garcia.
It's to distract him,
but also like to not, they do this whole racial tension thing that like plays out in a way that like it makes sense in the heist. Cause you like, and Andy Harris, each one of them plays it so fucking well. Like Bernie Mac is so funny. Matt Damon is so snivelly and Andy Garcia so doesn't want to be there. Because it's so uncomfortable and like, so awkward for him.
Like, there's
and
Matt Damon's literally being so nothing gross. And there's literally no way he can like interject himself in the situation without being.
He just wants to get out of there. He just wants to leave. And like that, it's such, I don't know, it's so well done to me that I don't know. It's like I had all these things I was gonna say, and I thought about the scene. I thought about how good everybody is in that scene, how good Bernie Mac is in that scene. Now I'm like speechless because it's like, the use of making people uncomfortable in heist movies, especially in this movie where it's like there's very little tension. Mm-hmm. I think there are these moments of tension, but they're eased off pretty easily, and they're eased off pretty like with like a lot of like humor.
Yeah,
and this is funny and tense and uncomfortable at the same time, kind of.
Yeah.
And it makes such a good strategy, right? Because like
it's such a good strategy.
That's the human emotion that we're the least like prone to confronting. Like if you make us angry, if you make us sad, like, well, it feels like there are several like more built-in or instinctive reactions to several emotions, but being just awkward, that you just do anything to get out of an awkward situation. Yeah.
And it's like you can see Andy Garcia like erasing the moment from his mind as it's happening, which is like, it's perfect. You want this to be forgotten. You want to be forgotten. So making it like that mm-hmm. kind of awkward is like, in most of the time when I watch these, I'm like, this is fun. But I'm like, if I ever want to do a heist or if I ever want to do a con job, like this seems like a good strategy. Every once in a while, I'll like take a note down and like making somebody really uncomfortable and awkward. Like that seems like a great really strategy. Good. Yeah. And Paula points out it's way smarter than I forgot my key card bit. This sets Matt Damon up to, he like says he forgot something in the other room afterwards. And like Terry Benedict's so fucking ready to be done with him. So yeah, he's back. I can't want to say backstage, but he's in the bowels of this casino, and he can then hop into the elevator. He makes the pull, because it's these codes he needs to get to, in Andy Garcia's pocket, because he's the pickpocket. And yeah, then we get him and George Clooney in their little Mission Impossible outfits in the elevator shaft with their glow sticks. Thank you for letting me digress.
No, it's great, because that scene is honestly like, Bernie Mac is just so fucking funny. The whole, like, you want me to dance on the table? Like, he just has so many great lines there that are just fucking perfect. And yeah.
His costumes, like, so watching good. This, I realized, like, his wardrobe in this movie is fantastic. And I want so many of his shirts.
Yes.
Okay, apparently he improvised a bunch of those lines, including that's so that you perfect. Want me to go on the table and dance.
Oh, that makes me so
fucking
happy.
King. Fucking like, king.
Honestly, legend, honestly. Oh, okay, so we're like deep in the heist at this point. We've got a lot of pieces in play. We got a lot of pieces set up. It's very exciting. We eventually do get the call from Brad Pitt to Terry Benedict. That's like, I'm going to rob you. If you want to keep half your money, let us walk out the door with it. Blah, blah, blah. And they set up this whole kind of double blind, which is very fun and very exciting once you kind of figure out what had happened with it. And I sort of half remembered. So this was very fun for me because I was like, okay, I know there's something going on with the video feed, but I didn't remember like exactly how it was set up. So I was like, oh shit, right. Okay. Something about video and okay. They're going to figure this out. They're going to work it out. And of course, also Danny Ocean has made his own little deal with, again, one of our favorite characters here, at least one of my favorite characters. He's only in it for a second, but it is where Fernanda got her nickname. It's Bulldog,
Bruiser.
Right?
Yeah, so that's the thing I wanted to ask you. I didn't remember them saying Bulldog in the movie. I just knew it was the Bruiser. Then on IMDb, he's credited as Bulldog. And so I was like, I didn't really know whether he's just the Bruiser or he's Bulldog the Bruiser. Yeah. In my head canon, he's Bulldog the Bruiser because it's just objectively cooler.
I mean, Bruiser's a job title, right? I mean, that's a class.
In his case, play. I think it's more of a personality trait. Though he does seem like a gentle soul.
Yeah.
He seems, you know, he apologized after punching Danny.
Yeah, it was only supposed to come after, because it's supposed to be a big fake, like, oh, Danny has been put in the, you know, with the heavies kind of thing, and he's going to get beat up by the guards and blah, blah, blah. And so Bruiser's in on it, so he does need to hit him, but he was only supposed to hit him after, and it was like, oh, sorry, and of course you get the, oh, how's the wife? Pregnant again. It's like this very funny banter, of course. And that, but that allows Danny to meet up with, what is his name in it? Linus. And they do their Mission Impossible suit thing. So they get down to their Mission Impossible suits, which I liked. We get Basher using the pinch to cut the power so that they can go through the laser thing and, you know, sort of, I guess, rappel down, kind of. Doesn't seem like it goes super well. I don't think they practiced that part super well.
Yeah, but, they had to cut the thing or the laser. Yeah.
But then they get into the vault. Okay,
that's really painful on your, like, whole crotch area.
I would imagine. Now that you mention it, it's something I always thought.
Like,
that's
okay.
What I understand about that.
The harnesses. That kind
of harness.
I mean, like, I've done a fair amount of rock climbing, and you have to wear that type of harness for rock climbing.
You've also done rock climbing, Danielle. What haven't you done on this earth? It's humiliating to the rest of us.
What are you talking about? You've never gone rock climbing?
No. I'm never going to go rock climbing in my fucking life. No. Are you kidding me? Never.
No.
Nobody on this podcast.
One, I don't think I can legally do it. And two, I don't want to.
Okay, I mean, I'm not trying to shame. I just thought this was like a thing people try. It's every
a thing
now and then.
I've like pulled the producer. You're not like, I keep my ass on the ground, Paul or producer.
Okay, that's fair. I just feel weird because I thought this was like a.
No, I don't even ride a bike. I can't even ride a bike because I don't like having my feet off the ground.
Okay.
I can't do box jumps. Like I can't take both my feet off the ground.
Yeah, it's super. Those are super scary.
They're terrifying. So see Danielle, you're alone here on this.
I'm sorry,
lots of people like being off the ground. Lots of people. I mean, I think is Nikki into rock climbing?
Yes, Nikki does rock climbing. Maybe we'll find a climbing gym somewhere. I don't think I'm a daredevil. I just go to like the local climbing gym and I put on the auto belay and like the little harness. Like it's not. I'm not like hardcore. I'm not out there fucking climbing, you know, Mont Capitan in Yosemite or anything. I'm just like the local.
You're
gym.
Still gonna be like so good for our heist. We're gonna need your climbing skills.
Yeah, like and you're like, the you're the one who's getting in there and doing all this stuff. You're rappelling down.
I can't jump like yen. I can't do wild.
No, you can't
flips.
Do the flippy flips, but you can like you can rappel down the elevator shaft.
Yeah,
in your Mission Impossible outfit.
I guess I could do that part. I mean,
see?
Yeah. All right. I guess I could do that part. All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
I can pretend to have a heart attack.
Okay. All right. That's pretty cool. Look, we've all got skills. We've all got beautiful skills. I was just going to judge them for, like, you could practice that. That's all I meant. Like, you could practice. Well, that's an easy thing to practice. What's that?
They only have two. They only
the climbing
have, like, 2 weeks
or
of
the
prep.
Harness?
The whole heist. They only have 2 weeks to prep.
Yeah, but like you could go to the local climbing gym.
They're trailing. Linus is trailing Terry Benedict the whole time. They have to build all this stuff. I mean, you're an editor in chief of a website. It's a lot of work. You do a lot of work, right?
I'm just saying that's the easiest thing out of all of the possible things that they do. They create an entire. They construct a whole thing. They heist a science lab institute. They do so many things that are so much harder than walking into a local scrub, normal ass climbing gym and just practice rappelling. Like, that's the easiest fucking thing to do, man. Like
that's American privilege. Here in Mexico City, we don't have climbing gyms at every corner.
I just meant for just Vegas. They gotta have them in Vegas.
I love that. But I love that they stole a single piece and that one single piece like can take the power out of like all of Vegas.
Right?
How is that a thing?
Right? Like they have these like superhuman like sci-fi fucking shit going on and they couldn't practice the one thing. I'm sorry. Okay, you know what? I'm just going too far down this road.
The harnesses, they seem uncomfortable on the crotch. They still manage it. Then they have to cut it down at the end because something jams, but they make it. That's the whole thing.
They do make it, so maybe they did practice once. It just wasn't a great practice, and that's what
I think it's just painful on the dick and balls. And, like, even if it's no matter how much you practice, even actually if you do practice, it just gets, like, more painful.
Oh my God.
I mean, I know a lot of people who have that particular anatomy who climb all the time. Like, I think there's ways around it. I'm just, you
there
know.
Are.
Yeah.
They had another very specific podcast idea.
I know, right? I mean, I'm sorry. I Yeah, this is me being a stupid asshole who just, like, gets caught up in the dumbest shit. I'm so sorry. This is all my fault.
Why are you so mean to my friend Danielle?
I'm sorry.
Right?
Why'd you call my friend Danielle a stupid asshole?
We will not tolerate Danielle Slender here.
She's trying.
That's our friend.
Main heister. You know,
I just feel like such a weirdo now that nobody else is rock climbing. I feel like you're a weird special freak.
You have a particular set of skills, okay? And it's beautiful. We appreciate it.
Thank you're you. The Liam Neeson of our group.
Yeah, exactly. We're on the same wavelength.
Thank you so much.
The whole thing in that scene also, like, and that's the beauty of heist movies, right? It's a lot of moving parts and they have to, like, adjust in a very specific way. And yes, we have that throughout the entire operation, right? Like, things that if a small, tiny thing goes wrong, the entire thing falls apart and they almost blow up Yen in that situation. That kind of...
I was so afraid because, again, I, the like, most half tense remembered. Moment yeah.
In
yeah.
that movie. I know exactly what happens. I know he's going to be fine. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know he's going to be fine. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And like every single time I've ever seen this movie and or any part of this movie, because I always end up seeing this part, like I get really tense here.
What if now's the time when things don't end up well?
I don't know. Right? It just is movie magic.
I know. But Yen is so like, I feel a real affinity to Yen because like, listen.
I don't
want
to go back to the circus.
Right, right. You want him to be okay. And like, I'm a very small human being. He's a small human being. He does athletic shit, but he also gets hurt, right? Like, he has the little wrist wrap, and that's why he gets stuck. I'm kind of like, listen, my wrist is a piece of shit. I have to wrap it up to do anything. Like, I felt a real affinity for him. And he also, like, he's doing these absolutely wild feats that are so hard and so ridiculous. And he's still, like, occasionally, you know, he's not, like, getting the 10 on the landing, right? He does slip up a tiny bit, so it, like, it shows how hard it is, right? Like, the fact that it's not picture perfect shows just how fucking hard it is. And so I just wanted to, like, show appreciation for him and how hard he's fucking working. He has the hardest job here. He has the hardest job, physically speaking, the hardest job, like, out of all of it. Like, obviously, the actors, the folks who are pulling off the cons that require a lot of acting, that, of course, is very difficult as well. But, like, just physically speaking, he has to breathe out of a little weird tube, being contorted for half an hour. He has to do a wild jump after being contorted, which, let me tell you how cramped up my legs would be, you know? So, yeah, I just appreciate him, and I was very scared for him in that moment.
And the stakes are the highest for him, because they can all get arrested, but, like, he can literally die with, like, most of his assignments.
Yeah, he could actually just be dead. Like, he's putting so much on the line, you know? Anyway, I just love him, and I just wish there was more of him in this movie, because I would watch a movie about people who were all acrobats doing a heist. You know what I mean? Like, what if there was a, like, you know, an entire troop of, like, acrobats who all had to, like, contort, and they all had to contort in, like, different places. Like, one person has this key, one person has that key, one person has this other kind of thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, I don't know, if this is where my brain goes, is that I appreciate the, you know, the people who can do the feats of strength, I guess, because that's where my brain goes. But, yeah, that was probably the most tense moment. And then we start to wrap up towards, like, really rapidly here towards kind of the denouement of, like, what's really going on here? Because it's like, oh, shit, they're going to get stuck. Because Benedict, the asshole, which, first of all, he makes Julia Roberts leave the room before he puts on, like, asshole voice, which is, that's a slimy man. Super slimy man right there. So it's it's a lot, right? Call on the SWAT team, and we get, oh my God, there's gunshots. Oh shit, there's a guy in the vault. We get a lot of this through kind of the security room footage. We're cutting back and forth. We've got a lot of tension, a lot of excitement. And this is where I'm going to give a lot of props to the editors in this movie, because I think they did an amazing job making all of it, you know, very exciting. Of course, you know, all the cinematography, all the elements of production are in full swing here. This is a very, very slickly produced movie, but you know how I'm an editing pervert, and I always appreciate good editing that adds to, like, tension, adds to excitement, et cetera, et cetera.
No, and the ending of this movie is gorgeous. Like,
it's so good. Yeah. It's just so clean and fun and like peppy. I don't know how else to put it. Like, it really keeps things just moving along in a very fun way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of like the, I mean, it isn't as stylish as the Thomas Crown Affair editing, but just in terms of like the slickness and quickness and like confidence.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It at least seems like it's speaking it's like a distant cousin.
Yeah. Yeah. I super agree. And then we get, does somebody want to take the, oh shit, what really was happening? The like really great reveal.
Yeah. So it's like, it's a really nice reveal. It's really well, it's really nicely done. It's really like satisfying. Like, I keep saying things. I feel like I sound like a pervert when I call things tasty, but like, it's really tasty. The reveal that like, oh, actually like the video that everybody in the casino was watching was a tape that they had taped in their fake version of the vault. And the money that they've been holding hostage in the vault and in this van are both like the, like it, these flyers that you get for, cause prostitution is legal in Nevada.
You get lots of those walking like, up and down the street. Like tons,
yeah, you get just tons and tons and tons of these flyers for like individual people and brothels and stuff. And like there is, so like to think of like there's, it's just like the streets are littered with them. It's like the most worth, it's like one of the most worthless forms of paper. It's like this, like, because yeah, it's just everywhere and no, and getting handed out, and that's what's actually in there, and that's what gets blown up, and it's like very humiliating for Terry Benedict when he discovers this. They pay off the remote control car thing. There's nobody actually driving the van. It's just unfortunately Casey Affleck and the wonderful Elliot Gould like messing with it, and it turns out actually they did take the money right out the front door as the SWAT team.
They were the SWAT team bags.
And it was all staged and all planned for and everything. Like, it was, yeah, like a Swiss watch. It was beautiful. All the parts moved perfectly. Everything happened the way it needed to happen. Even the mistakes ended up saving lives. Like, yeah.
Their fake SWAT walked so that Cardi B's fake Interpol could run.
Oh my god! Oh my god!
It really did, though. It's really,
it's true inspirational figures.
Since I knew what it was, and I've seen this part of this movie so many times, it definitely like gets less and less satisfying the more you watch it.
Sure,
it's still satisfying, but like, I'm trying to remember how it felt like the first time I watched this and like when I first saw it come together. Mm-hmm. And again, my like little little preteen brain.
Yeah.
That had a very limited experience with heist movies. Just being like, wow.
Mind blown.
Wow.
It's so clever. It's so well put together. It just feels good to watch things come together like that. It's the reason why puzzles are fun. Right? When you feel the solution, you know, when it comes together, it's just so satisfying.
Yeah. Like dominoes falling. Because I don't do puzzles. I think puzzles are boring and a lot of work. But dominoes. they are more accessible, I would say.
Hey, that's like a physics puzzle. That's kind of like a puzzle to put it together. So it is
a puzzle to put it together. But also, Danielle, I hate dominoes and I love puzzles. I just don't want you to feel like you're a weirdo again because you like rock climbing and puzzles. I love puzzles.
I'm really ostracizing Danielle today.
No, you're fine. Now we can ostracize you for liking dominoes. It's great.
Oh, how the tables have turned.
We'll find something I'm into at some point before the episode is over.
Yeah. Heist movies.
No, but we don't like. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. We'll figure it out, I'm sure.
We'll find something.
But there is like I thought the same thing that you were, I had the kind of the same instinct as you were saying, LBO, just trying to figure out how I felt when it all first came together for me, because I'm pretty sure it was just like, this is the most genius thing I've ever. I'm like most white men watching the Inception stuff.
Oh my God.
Like, yeah. Just like, this is the most brilliant thing I've ever seen in my life. I'm pretty sure that's how I went about it.
Oh my God. And then we do have like at least a very quick, you know, oh God, I hate the romance in this movie. It really lets me down. But we do have that quick scene of like, okay, Julia Roberts is watching Channel 88 because, of course, this is the last part of the heist is Danny Ocean confronting Benedict and being like, oh, I can tell you who got your money if you give up Julia Roberts, which, of course, you know, treating her like a possession, like every other line in this movie, personal effects, et cetera, et cetera. And he's
in fairness, it's $150 million. Like, I wouldn't expect people to take me over $150 million. I'm just saying.
I mean,
he already has $750 million.
He has so much money.
He has so much
that
money.
That is kind of true. And he doesn't even enjoy it. You guys are right.
He's not even happy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Having fun.
Yeah, he's not even having fun.
He doesn't even like the art. He likes art because she likes the art. Gross.
Right?
Yeah. Ew.
But yeah, he gets the incriminating moment of Terry Benedict being like, yeah, I don't care. Who do you know? And then, of course, it's a nothing tip. There's nothing
you
there.
You know a guy. That's the most spoken line in my household. Oh. You know a guy.
He sends George Clooney back to prison, sort of, right? Because he understands he's in violation of his parole.
Yeah. So he's got 3 to 6 months, and Julia Roberts, for some reason, I just don't get the motivation here. Like,
me neither. There's none.
She's mad at Danny Ocean for being a thief and a liar. And that's what he's doing best right here. And she's just like, well, I guess I don't like Terry anymore. I guess I'll just go back to him. It's like, girl, you can go wherever.
You're the curator of the Bellagio Museum.
Right? And you're like fucking Julia Roberts. It's like, I know you have trouble like dressing yourself, but that shouldn't stop you from finding true love, Julia. Right? Just get a stylist.
Right? I'm like, how about, you know what the truest love is? The love you have for yourself.
Yes!
That's the greatest love of all, Julia Roberts.
That's beautiful. So, if only she had somebody. Professional. She needed somebody there to be able to say that to her. And she
She did. Everybody
failed
her. She has no
her.
Friends also.
Yeah, she has no friends.
She has no
one. She only has one boyfriend
the museum
at a time.
And man.
Like, ugh. Just depressing.
That's why my ending should have been my ending that I made.
I agree.
My fan fiction.
I am there with you. We do also have a lovely scene, which is one of my kind of favorite scenes, which is the boys all walk out and look at a fountain after they finish their heist and they're very happy. That's kind of nice. It's just a nice scene. It's just sweet. It's like, oh, they're so happy. Look at these happy boys. They got their money. Nobody died. Like, oh, that's good. You know, they're pretty happy about it.
They fucked over the asshole guy. Like, everybody wins.
Yeah. Everybody's Except pretty happy. Tess. Oh, yeah. And then we get a cut to 3 to 6 months later. You know, George Clooney comes out of prison wearing a tux. And then we get like, we get a prison joke. We get a prison joke right here. We do get a little bit of a prison joke.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we do. We do a little bit right there. We do a little bit right there. And then he drives Danny Ocean and Tess away. They sit in the back seat and kiss. And then it actually ends with two of the heavies, like two of Terry Benedict's guards.
These identical goons.
Identical goons. Driving after them, but the music's real happy, and then we cut to credits. So I guess everybody's happy, but Terry Benedict is still in the picture. He's still in the picture there. So you know, it's one of those the end with a question mark. That's basically what that is. But then we do roll credits, and for the most part, people get what they want. It's just like there's that little bit of danger. Like you can never, you know, you can get out of the life, but will the life get out of you? I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Sure.
But that's Ocean's 11, friends. Any other thoughts about the ending and, you know, whether or not it's a happy ending and any other feelings we should share before we wrap up?
I just agree with LB's ending.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. Yep.
the alternative ending we never get, but shall forever live in our minds after today.
I agree. LB wrote the much better ending to this movie.
Yeah. It's my curse.
To be right all the time, LB.
It's my curse, yeah.
Having that brain, it's a blessing, but also a curse.
Like, I always know what they should have done. And it's always too late. Yep. And I have no way to get in touch with them.
Steven Soderbergh, if you are
it's too late. I mean, this movie is like 20 years old.
It is exactly 20 years old. So, it's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, this came out December 7th, 2001. So almost 20. It's, 20 and one half years old. Also, it would have been a fun Christmas Day movie to go see with the family.
Yeah.
Damn, I should have done that. I didn't, but.
A lot of regrets around the Ocean's
Yeah, a lot of regrets. I mean, I was fucking like 11 or 12. I was probably like, I was like 10 or 11 when they made this movie. Can you imagine being like, hello, Steven Soderbergh, I'm a psychic child. I know you're making this movie and I foresaw how you're going to end it. And here's what I think you should do instead.
That would have been pretty fucking cool. And like, I mean, with the timing, they probably would have been like, if you're a psychic child, why didn't you tell us about 9/11? You're like, no, this is only for this movie.
I'll say I did. Like, literally, I heard about it on the radio. It's not even 8 a.m. here. And I told you who's responsible. It's George W. Bush.
Whoa. genius child.
Just like psycho conspiracy theorist 12-year-old who watched way too many specials about like who really killed Biggie. We need to ask these questions. Yeah,
I am so impressed by child you, LB. It's not even funny.
I'm trying to think of like what can be the thing you ostracize me for.
I don't know.
I'm afraid of you now. You have psychic abilities. I'm not going to trust you.
No, I don't have psychic abilities. That's how I didn't contact Steven Soderbergh.
We'll find something.
Watching this time around did really strike me that this is a commercial for the Bellagio Hotel.
Oh, 100%.
And, like, that is a beautiful scene at the fountain. It's so lovely. And, like, I always kind of cry a little bit when, like, Carl Reiner's still standing there. I'm like, you still got it, man. Like, did a beautiful heist. His little Hawaiian shirt, which, Danielle, I think you should have all his shirts.
Yes. His fashion is absolutely me in this movie.
You deserve all those shirts.
Thank you.
Like, I get really emotional. I'm like, this is a commercial for the Bellagio Hotel. Like, this makes this hotel seem like the most glamorous, exciting, like, fancy, hip place. Like, this is the future of Las Vegas. It's not Viva Las Vegas anymore. It's Slick Heist at the Bellagio.
And then enjoy the fountain to relax. And enjoy the fountain. After your SWAT team antics.
But, like, how many people do you think go to that fountain and, like, pretend they're in that scene?
Oh, everyone. Every day. Everyone. Like, 1,000 people a day, at least. I don't know. That's a number I brought out. I don't know if it's 1,000 people. Yeah, it's like, probably a line, says Paul. It's true.
Yeah.
It's probably true.
But thank you for, unless you all have more to say, I just wanted to say thanks for watching all these heist movies I picked out this month. It was really fun.
It was fantastic. I feel like more than any other month, except for maybe Beach Month, because we learned a lot about Fernanda, I feel like, during Beach Month. But more than any other month, I feel like we learned so much about you and your brain, LB, during watching all these heists. Like, I really feel like I know the way your mind works better than I used to. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I'm excited for next month.
Yes. Shall we announce the theme for next month?
Yes, I'm excited.
It is not heists. It's like not a lot of these movies aren't quite as smart as a lot of these movies. I'll put that to you. It is creature feature month involving scary creatures that do scary things to people, to characters.
Yeah.
It's like more or less maybe natural, more or less, kind of. Oh, yes. Paul has the perfect way to put it. What is the weakness month? That's exactly it. That is it.
I was just going to complain that we didn't have a punny name month. But now we do. Thanks to Paul.
What is the weakness? It is creature features. And we are going to start with one of the most classic creature features. We're going to watch Jaws. We're going to watch the original Steven Spielberg Jaws. So it's a great white shark. It's Amity Beach. it's a lot of people real scared to go swimming.
And, we're going to need a bigger podcast.
Ah, so good. I've never seen this movie. I'm invested.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited to watch this with y'all. It is quite the classic. It's a great summer movie. It's especially like a really good like later summer movie, like Dog Days of Summer. Like maybe you're already sick of the beach at this point, that kind of thing. And we're, oh shit. All right. We've got a couple of first time watchers. So I'm real excited to go through this with y'all. So yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. This next month's going to be fun. If you want to watch along with us, watch Jaws, the 1975 original. So thank you all so very much. Thank you for being here for Heist Month. Thank you in advance for being here for Creature Feature Month. We do hope you enjoyed your cinematic journey with us. Please do, if you have a second, rate and review our podcast because it helps us so very much. Or tell a friend, you know, tell somebody in your crew, whether it be the, you know, the person who does acrobatics, the person who does IT, the person who does explosions, whatever it is. Tell somebody that you think might enjoy our show. That helps us so very much, and we really appreciate it. You can listen to all of our shows at fanbyte.com/podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Fanbyte Media, Instagram, and TikTok at Fanbyte. And of course, on fanbyte.com. And you can watch all of our good streams on twitch.tv/fanbyte. Thank you so very much to Paul. Hell in a handbasket to Mayo for producing. Thank you, Paul. We appreciate you. We appreciate the hard work you do. And we appreciate all of the excellent sort of trivia that you put into the show notes for us. So until next time, LB, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at HunkTears.
How about you, Fernanda?
You can find me on Twitter as well as NandaPrates, P-R-A-T-E-S _.
Awesome. You can find me at Danielle R.I. on Twitter. And you can find Paul, our producer, at Holly Mayo on Twitter. Until next time, don't go in the water, and you'd love to see it.